Hello and welcome to volume 44, number 23 of your weekly local news magazine, Grapevine. Brought to you by the Greater Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 7th of June 2024. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Desney. And in this week's issue, is the safest place for drugs an old bank? The new Conservative candidate could live locally if he wins. And an annual yacht race experiences rough weather. In addition, Desney takes a look at next week's TV and we have a new local song to play you. All this coming your way during the next hour or so, but first, the birthdays. Well, birthday, actually, as we have just one celebrating listener this week, that being June Stamp, who will be cutting the cake on Wednesday the 12th. Have a wonderful day, June. Right, it's news time, so over to Desney, followed by her look at the week's TV.
Hello everyone, this is Desney, your newsreader for the week. Well, it's June, but I wouldn't call it flaming June just yet. Doesn't seem to be able to make up its mind whether the sun's going to shine or the showers are going to come. Hopefully, by the time it's the summer solstice, it will have made up its mind to have a good few days. A man who was involved in a violent altercation with a police officer has been sentenced for assaulting another officer. Michael McQueen, 37, of Hall Quay in Great Yarmouth, also pleaded guilty to threatening behaviour and a sexual assault. McQueen appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court following his arrest on Haven Bridge in the early hours of May the 31st. McQueen was found on the bridge shouting and swearing, and while being questioned at Great Yarmouth Police Station, McQueen spat at an officer. At his hearing later on May the 31st, McQueen received 28 weeks in custody following his admission to a public order offence and assaulting an officer. He also received an additional 4 weeks to his sentence after pleading guilty to sexually assaulting a woman at HMP Norwich on December the 21st. Earlier in May, McQueen was also involved in a violent altercation with a police officer on St Peter's Road, Yarmouth, which was caught on video and circulated on social media. The incident was referred to the Independent Office for Police Conduct, IOPC, and the investigation is expected to last several months. The officer has not been at work since then, although Norfolk Constabulary say he has not been suspended. A brazen, banned driver was caught back behind the wheel while driving home after appearing in court. Glenn Miller, 51, who has twice been jailed for driving while disqualified, was stopped in Great Yarmouth in an MG SUV vehicle. It came less than 2 hours after being stood in the dock at Norwich Crown Court on May the 22nd, charged with unrelated offences. He had been spotted and followed by an unmarked police vehicle before being pulled over on Stonecutters Way. Prosecutors at Norwich Magistrates Court said he had claimed to officers that he had not been in the driver's seat and had only moved over when the vehicle was stationary. But a dash cam had shown him attempting to hide, with footage also proving he was in fact the driver. Miller of Kent Square in Great Yarmouth pleaded guilty to driving while disqualified and having no insurance. The court was told he was first banned in 2005 after dangerous driving and had been sent to prison for driving while still disqualified in both 2006 and 2008. He had been ordered to take an extended retest before regaining his licence, but had never bothered. Richard Mann, mitigating, said it had been a misunderstanding on his part, as he had assumed he could drive again when his previous ban ended. He said a friend had initially driven them, but he had got behind the wheel himself because he was desperate to get back to Great Yarmouth to comply with a court-imposed curfew. He now understands that if he does it again, he will go to prison, he added. Deputy District Judge Jackie Appleton sentenced him to 12 weeks in prison, suspended for 6 months. She banned him from driving for a further 12 months. With your record, clearly the custodial threshold has been passed, but I am just persuaded to suspend the sentence, she told him. Great Yarmouth's new Conservative candidate has announced he will move his family to the town if he is successful on July the 4th. James Clark, originally from Cheltenham, was announced as the new Tory candidate last week. A former soldier and current reserves major, he previously battled for Jeremy Corbyn's Islington North seat in the 2017 and 2019 general elections. He said he was drawn to the town by its reputation, and having visited as a child, he would be based here throughout the campaign. He said he'd put his name in the hat for the vacant seat because the town's stature was second to none. It's a lovely part of the world, he said. I really loved the sea and the beach, but in all honesty, part of the appeal, what makes 7 million odd people visit every year, is the tourism and Norfolk's beautiful scenery. I've been to Yarmouth as a child, but it's not somewhere I've spent much time. But it is somewhere I will spend a lot of time in the future if I'm successful on July the 4th. We'll buy a family home here, and during the campaign I will be staying, living and breathing in Great Yarmouth. Mr. Clark said if he is elected, there will also be a return of in-person surgeries which have not been held by Sir Brandon Lewis, who is stepping down. Mr. Clark visited Hopton and Belton on Saturday. He said he was committed to delivering on the £350 million pledge to improve the James Paget Hospital and helping to transform Yarmouth into the UK's energy capital and improving infrastructure. It is time to get some finance from central government for an update to dual the Acle Strait, he said. The Conservatives have promised £350 million worth of redevelopment into the James Paget, and frankly, Labour hasn't agreed to match that funding, so I'll make sure if I am elected to push that funding through. I love the idea of improving productivity and generating wealth. With this flywheel, we can get Yarmouth going. My overriding ambition is to be the best Member of Parliament I can be for Great Yarmouth. It's as simple as that. Mr. Clark spent 7 years with the British Army and served 2 tours in Afghanistan. Since leaving the Army full-time, he has been active with the reserves, most recently training officer cadets. He has also served as an advisor for the Defence Secretary, Grant Shapps. He said Rishi Sunak's plan of reintroducing national service to 18-year-olds was a fantastic idea. I've been inside the Ministry of Defence and I know how important it is that we have a reserve of people who have a military ethos, he said. I currently train officer cadets in my role at an officer's training corps, and I see the amazing leadership, practical skills and camaraderie that military training can deliver to young people. I'm fully behind the idea of national service. Mr. Clark said he visited the area on Friday and was made aware of its ongoing plight with coastal erosion and Hemsby's fight for a change of criteria to enable government C defence funding. It's a very complicated problem, he said. Of course, putting in sea defences would affect the coast further down, but for these people whose homes are going to be affected, this is their number one concern. And it's something that, as the local MP, I will be taking very seriously and taking action on. Mr. Clark is looking to take over the position held by fellow Conservative Sir Brandon Lewis, who has been Great Yarmouth's MP since 2010. The town is a hotly contested constituency, with Labour candidate Keir Cousins recently showing several shadow cabinet ministers around the area. Meanwhile, Reform are standing one of their most high-profile candidates there, with former Southampton FC chairman Rupert Lowe vowing to slash immigration, cut tax and reward hard work. The only candidate who has lived locally for longer than this election campaign is Bradwell's Trevor Rawson, who is the candidate for the Green Party. Two men have appeared in court following the discovery of a cannabis farm inside an old bank in Great Yarmouth. One man's hearing was adjourned to allow the court time to find an interpreter, while the other was remanded in custody to appear at Norwich Crown Court in July. Fajon Halachi, 32, and Mark Kohler, 34, were arrested inside the old NatWest branch on Hall Quay on Friday night after a police raid led to the discovery of cannabis inside the property. The two men, both of Hall Quay, were later charged with the production of cannabis. Halachi appeared at Norwich Magistrates on Monday. He has been remanded in custody until his hearing at Norwich Crown Court at 10:30 a.m. on July the 1st. Kohler's Monday hearing was adjourned until Tuesday while the court found an Albanian interpreter. Officers found the cannabis farm in the former NatWest branch beside the Star Hotel at around 8:50 p.m. on Friday and discovered plants growing on three floors of the building. At least three police vehicles and officers were seen close to the boarded-up hotel at around 11:30 p.m. A police seal was in place over the last weekend and on Monday. A drive-through, a restaurant and 12 electric car charging bays could be making their way to the site of a closed-down restaurant in Great Yarmouth. Since Frankie and Benny's pulled out of the town last year, the former restaurant on Mitchell Drive, Cobham, has stood empty. Now BP aims to transform the area with two smaller restaurant sites, one with a drive-through and adding 12 electric vehicle EV charging stations to the grounds. Plans submitted to Great Yarmouth Borough Council state that if granted, the site will see the installation of 6 EV stations with canopies to provide 12 charging bays. The planning documents also state the estimated average charging time will take between 20 and 30 minutes, offering customers on-the-go charging. BP Pulse also laid out plans to demolish the existing plant area, build a substation and alter the car park's layout. The proposed scheme would provide parking spaces for 40 cars and the existing access to the site from Jones GC Way would remain unchanged. A decision on the plans is expected by mid-July. Millions of pounds are being used from the reserves of Norfolk County Council to help balance its budget, with fears dipping into those coffers is not sustainable. Latest figures show County Hall's reserves will shrink by more than £65 million over a five-year period, at a time when some councils have effectively declared bankruptcy. Leaders at the Conservative-controlled council say they are having to take money from reserves to deal with cost pressures in adult social care and children's services. They say the use of the money is carefully considered, but critics say it is not sustainable for the council, which is making £42 million of cuts and savings this year and needs to find £44 million more next year, to keep plundering reserves to pay for day-to-day services. Steve Morphew, leader of the Labour group at the County Council, questioned the Council's use of reserves at a recent meeting of its scrutiny committee. He said spending reserves on a day-to-day services shows County Hall Conservatives don't have a grip on Council finances. Their government systematically underfunds, but Norfolk Tories have made no serious effort to overhaul how the council works. Labour put forward radical plans for a more efficient way of achieving better value for money, but the Tories wouldn't even discuss them, and so we stagger on, hemorrhaging money. Pointing to how the council's cash balances, which includes earmarked reserves, dropped from £293 million in March 2023 to £177 million at the end of March this year, he said spending reserves at this rate means there will be nothing left by the end of 2025. But Andrew Jamieson, the council's deputy leader and cabinet member for finance, hit back, saying the use of reserves was carefully considered. He said the County Council holds earmarked reserves for a range of purposes. As I have frequently been on record as stating, despite agreeing to a robust and balanced budget for the forthcoming year, reserves are utilised to ensure services are maintained. Mr. Jamieson said the medium-term strategy, up to March 2028, planned for a reduction in earmarked reserves from £175.2 million in March 2023 to £110.8 million in March 2028. He said, to say that reserves would be used by the end of the next financial year is therefore incorrect. Mr. Jamieson said the council also adds money to reserves when possible. He added, when considering reserves, there is a balance to be struck between ensuring that the council's reserves and provisions are adequate, while also ensuring that council taxpayers' contributions are not held unnecessarily. Reserves consist of money which the council hold so they can plan for the future. They are split into earmarked reserves, which are set aside for known risks to the council, those ring-fenced for a specific purpose, and those unallocated to be used in emergencies or for budget gaps. Some reserves build up because the government gives council grants for spending over more than 1 year. When a council sets its balanced budget, its chief financial officer has to be sure it has sufficient reserves to cover it. They were once a target for English pirates, but they now draw in the tourists instead. A replica of a Spanish galleon has been boarded by more than 2,000 visitors. The masts and folded sails of the galleon Andalusia have been a part of the South Quay skyline since it arrived on Wednesday. The replica ship, whose design is similar to ships that dominated global waters throughout the 16th to the 18th centuries, was greeted with much fanfare as it docked in the town last week. Ship manager Alvaro Lacara Guerrera said the warm reception from its some 2,000 visitors has made the stop all the more special for the crew. "We didn't expect to see as many people," he said. "Even today, the children are back at school and the weather is so-so, but it's been a good turnout. We have been made very welcome in Great Yarmouth and we would love to come back either with this ship or one of the other three ships in our fleet." The floating museum will be in the town until June the 9th as part of its grand tour of Europe. Constructed by the Neo Victoria Foundation in Spain, the galleon Andalusia was launched in 2009. The ship is a faithful historical replica of the Spanish galleons that sailed the seas from the 16th to the 18th century, supplying the Spanish Empire and bringing back its riches to Europe, sometimes attracting the interests of English rivals en route. She is made almost entirely of wood, with the exception of a fiberglass hull, and has six decks made of iroko and pine. She has sailed more than 55,000 nautical miles around the world, visiting ports on four continents, such as Shanghai, Singapore, Hong Kong, Manila, New York, and Quebec, spreading its history. During her stay in Great Yarmouth, people will be able to get on board, tour her five decks, and learn about her details, how she sails, what life was like on board, and the history of these ships. Before arriving in Yarmouth, the galleon Andalusia had a stopover in Ostend, Belgium, and she will be crossing back over the North Sea for a stay in Delfzijde, Netherlands. A factory worker was found dead on Christmas Day after turning to alcohol for the first time in 4 years, an inquest has heard. Karoli Nagy, 49, was discovered unresponsive in his Great Yarmouth home on December the 25th by his brother Sandor. An inquest into his death heard that Ukraine-born Mr. Nagy had recently started drinking for the first time in years following the breakdown of a relationship. Norfolk Coroner's Court heard Mr. Nagy, who worked for Cranswick Country Foods, had last seen his brother on Christmas Eve, who said he was tipsy but not to a point that caused him any concern. But the following day, when he went to visit, he found his brother unresponsive and could not rouse him. A police investigation read to the court said Sandor Nagy had told officers his brother had broken up with a girlfriend a few weeks prior to his death and had started drinking heavily, having been abstinent since suffering an alcohol-related health condition in 2019. Senior coroner Jacqueline Lake concluded Mr. Nagy had died of an alcohol-related death. Police became suspicious after spotting Luke Allier, 30, on an e-bike in an area of Great Yarmouth known for drug dealing. Norwich Crown Court was told officers had followed him to a terraced house in Exmouth Road on December the 6th last year, which was discovered to be used to prepare and package cocaine. A seized phone showed Allier had been running a busy operation with dozens of messages discussing prices for drug wraps and amounts owed by customers, said prosecutors. He pleaded guilty to being concerned in the supply of Class A drugs and was jailed for 2 years and 9 months. Burglars who stole a large amount of Indian gold jewellery from a home in Galston have not been caught. The investigation into the break-in has been closed after police admitted investigations had failed to find the culprits after 6 months. The house in Yallop Avenue was broken into between 10 a.m. and 9:15 p.m. on November the 21st last year. The suspects entered through the back of the property. Once inside, they stole precious jewellery, silver and gold coins, and silverware, including dinner plates. Police had appealed for anyone who saw any suspicious activity, had dash cam or doorbell footage from around the area at the time, to come forward. They had also attempted to trace the whereabouts of the stolen items. However, they have now admitted it had drawn a blank. A police spokesman said all lines of inquiry have been exhausted and the case has been closed. Of course, we would always review any new information provided to us. Anyone who still has new information can contact Norfolk Constabulary. Let's have a look at some of the things you might like to watch or even avoid on television this week. Well, a television magazine seems to start and end with football. You may have thought that now it's June, the season was over. But no, Sunday, there's a soccer aid for UNICEF on ITV for, well, practically all evening. I think there's even a preview of the build-up in the afternoon at 3 o'clock. And then at 6 o'clock is soccer aid for UNICEF, the England versus soccer aid World 11, where an England team of celebs and football legends, including Tom Grennan, Paddy McGuinness, Joe Cole, Stuart Broad, isn't he cricket? Jermaine Defoe, Mo Farah, Jill Scott, go head-to-head with the World 11, featuring Usain Bolt, Lee Mack, Ronan Kemp, Maisie Adam, Martin Compston, Jason Manford and Eden Hazard. Then, at the other end of the week, Friday, it's the start of the men's Euros. You may have seen the Lionesses doing quite well this week when they beat France in France. But now the men start their tournament. So if you're a football fan, I'm sorry, but it's on for the next few weeks. If you're not a football fan, perhaps I should have said, if you are a football fan, you might enjoy the next few weeks. So on Sunday, before or in between the build-up and the actual football, there is a programme from the Royal Albert Hall for something far more important. D-Day 80 at the Royal Albert Hall, where Davina McCall hosts a concert of music and storytelling to commemorate the 80th anniversary of D-Day with the Royal Philharmonic Concert Orchestra, joined by Emily Salnday, Lulu and Catherine Jenkins, amongst others. And another television programme that goes out on Sunday is the final of the piano. Those of you who've been watching people playing the piano on stations in front of any onlookers that happen to be walking past at the time will know that there are now 7 finalists who must overcome last minute changes and battle backstage nerves before playing in front of a sold out auditorium. Lang Lang and Mika will judge who is the performer of the night. If you've been watching the series, you'll probably enjoy the final. And if you haven't, well, watch the football instead. During the week, there are 2 programmes in particular which seem to be following this new trend. Do you remember in the good old days when you watched something one day and you knew you had to wait a week before you could watch it again? Episode 2, or the second in the series? Now, Long Lost Family on ITV is on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday this week on ITV at 9 p.m. This time it's Long Lost Family Born Without Trace. And it starts with Thomas, who was left in the waiting room of Reading train station. Well, DNA now has helped a lot of these so-called foundlings. It's a very old word, that, isn't it? But still, that's what people who have been abandoned as babies do still get called. That's what a foundling is, abandoned at birth. So Thomas, the first thing that these people who do the research find is that Thomas has a cousin. And the cousin was also a foundling. That's incredible, isn't it? Cousin he never knew he had, he never knew who he was. And now DNA shows that he was not the only one who was abandoned as a baby. So was his cousin. on the steps of a church in Dublin. Other places where these poor babies have been abandoned include an underground car park, in a shopping basket tucked into a hedge, in a phone box, and, as has already been mentioned, on the steps of a church and in a train station waiting room. So if you are fascinated by these programmes, then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday on ITV at 9 p.m. The Thursday one is more of a what happened next, and it expands on the outcome of the previous Foundlings programme, Born Without Trace, and how these people are getting on now that they have met up with other family members, whether it's helped their life, whether it's helped them know who they really are. Then there's another programme on Channel 4 on Monday and Tuesday. Same odd thing. And this is the start of the Bake Off the Professionals. There are 10 episodes of this, so the first two are this week, Monday and Tuesday. And this is, well, it depends whether you like baking that much, that you want to see what the professionals can do now that MasterChef has finished and we haven't yet come to this year's Bake Off. So if you like watching your programmes one night after the other, instead of the good old days when we watched them once a week and that was it, and then we knew what to talk about at work the next day because we'd all watched at the same time. None of this streaming malarkey. Anyway, I hope you enjoy something on television this week. Let me know.
People are trying to do some magic with food. I thought that tune would be appropriate. You Can Do Magic from Limmy and the Family Cooking. Yeah. Okay, more news now, followed by that new local song I mentioned.
A quarter of criminals caught by police in Norfolk last year had no previous offences, new figures show. Ministry of Justice figures show Norfolk and Stourbury dealt with 1,804 first-time offenders last year. This included 81 under-18s. Of those, 1,185 were convicted, while the rest were only cautioned. While repeat and prolific offenders made up the majority of those arrested, it meant one in four had never been in trouble with the law before. Tyrone Steele, Deputy Legal Director of law reform charity Justice, said, "Entering the criminal justice system is life-changing in all the wrong ways. Providing and strengthening real routes away from crime, from better access to mental health and addiction services to housing and employment, would help to reverse the worrying trend of increases in those entering the criminal justice system for the first time, including children." In Norfolk, 16% of those who were convicted for the first time received a community sentence, while 9% were sent to prison. Campbell Robb, chief executive of social justice charity NACRO, said, "Much of the conversation on reducing crime focuses on prison, and increasing sentencing, despite the evidence showing that increasing the length of a prison sentence is not an effective deterrent. Even a short sentence can mean people lose their jobs, homes, and custody of their children, making it harder to build a crime-free life afterwards. And the evidence shows that short prison sentences are less effective at preventing further crime than sentences served in the community." First-time offenders in Norfolk, convicted of an indictable offence, were most often convicted for drug offences, more than a quarter of total arrests. Separate figures also showed that two-thirds of cautions or convictions for knife crime were handed to first-time offenders. In contrast, the most common offence for those with a criminal past was theft, at 34%. The Home Office and the Ministry of Justice were both approached for comment. People living in Norfolk have won more than £1.2 million in this month's premium bonds draw. It was announced this morning that 405 people across the county have won a total of £1,280,000, averaging £3,160 per person. Three lucky winners walked away with £100,000 and four others took home £50,000 each. Four people won £25,000 and 14 others won £10,000. A further 40 won £5,000, while hundreds more scooped £1,000. In last month's draw, 409 people across the county won a total of £1,263,000, averaging £3,088 per person. Premium bonds are an investment product from National Savings and Investments, NS&I. Andrew Westhead, NS&I Retail Director, said the quickest way to check if you have won a prize is to use our Premium Bonds Prize Checker app, check online, or even ask your smart speaker from the second working day of each month onwards. Unlike other investments, where investors earn interest or a regular dividend income, bonds are entered into a monthly prize draw, where people can win between £25 and £1 million. A 20-year-old has spoken of the sheer fate that led him to launching his own business. Rye Lacey opened the telephone box in Case John C's High Street on May the 20th, after Stuart Platten, a friend of his father, decided to invest in his talent. "It came around through sheer fate," Mr. Lacey said. "I've been repairing iPhones, iPads and anything like that for around a year and a half, and the idea of opening a phone shop lingered in the back of my mind. But I thought the reality of opening one would be years down the line." His father discussed his talent with his friend of more than 20 years, Mr. Platten, who confessed he had been looking to get involved in a similar venture. "He gave me the call as soon as he heard, and that same night the plan was set into motion," Mr. Lacey said. "I'm so happy we took a leap of faith instead of forever wondering what if." Mr. Platten added, "I had some money put to one side and I've been looking to put it towards something in tech for around 5 or 6 years. I'd just never gotten around to looking into it in too much detail." He also explained he will trust Mr. Lacey to run the shop and provide external support where possible. He continued, "I'm a welder by trade, but worked for my dad between 1994 and 2010, so I've got some experience and can give Rye help and support where he needs it. But honestly, it's been going really well so far." Mr. Lacey confirmed business had been busy and said his ambition has only grown since opening the shop. "I believe if you have a burning desire to achieve something with passion and unwavering commitment, you can truly achieve anything," he said. "I hope to keep pushing and eventually become a household name and a go-to mobile and tech repair shop." A new county-wide levy will be imposed on developers of new housing to raise millions toward a council's spiralling costs to get children to school. For the first time, Norfolk County Council is introducing a new charge on house builders specifically to contribute to its bill for transporting youngsters to and from school by taxis, buses and minibuses. The Conservative-controlled council's spending on home-to-school transport soared to £62 million this year, and leaders believe they can generate about £1 million a year through the new charge. The council has a statutory duty to provide free travel to their nearest suitable school for eligible children aged 5 to 16. The bulk of the spend is to get children with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND, to schools best placed to cater for their needs. That can mean costly taxi rides miles from their homes. The council has long used Section 106 agreements, part of the granting of planning permission, to get contributions from house builders towards education, libraries, green infrastructure and fire hydrants. That has brought in more than £189 million since 2000, but County Hall has not previously used its power to secure money for home-to-school transport. Under changes agreed by the Cabinet this week, charges will now come in from 2026. It will apply to developments of more than 20 houses and can be sought when there is no suitable solution for sustainable access to school. Officers said County Hall's priority would be to support sites in sustainable locations with safe walking routes to school, but if a scheme is outside such an area, the charge would help recoup the additional costs. Alison Thomas, the Council's Cabinet Minister for Children's Services, said, "It is very welcome to see a planning obligation for home-to-school transport. We know how much of a pressure that puts on a big rural county like Norfolk. Many of the children in rural villages have to rely on home-to-school transport because the public transport is just not flexible enough or available to get them to school on time. The amount payable will be based on the average cost for transporting pupils in the previous financial year, multiplied by the number of children expected to live in new developments. He is more used to tackling the North Sea as he sets out to help save stricken sailors, and now a member of Hemsby's lifeboat crew will take on the air in a daring challenge. Helmsman Michael Litton will be jumping from an aeroplane on July the 11th to help fund Hemsby Independent Lifeboat's mission of saving lives at sea and along the Norfolk Broads. Mr. Litton will be joined for the skydive at Beccles Airfield by his colleagues from the Industrial Support Services, from Altrad, that's the firm. The idea was originally suggested by a colleague, who is a keen supporter of the lifeboat and other emergency services. "I'm really excited," Mr. Litton said, "but the day is drawing nearer, so I'm getting a bit nervous, but it should be good fun. Being with the lifeboat is a sense of pride for me, and it's incredible to be able to help fund future operations alongside my colleagues." Hemsby Lifeboat is not affiliated with the RNLI and is on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year for people in need out at sea and along the Norfolk Broads. The lifeboat also regularly maintains the slipway onto Hemsby Beach, and many of its crew have acted as community support during bouts of erosion. For more information on how to donate, search "Raising Funds by Parachute Jumping for Hemsby Lifeboat" on GoFundMe. Sailors braved blustery conditions on the Norfolk Broads last weekend for an endurance race which has been described as Europe's toughest. A total of 40% of the boats competing in the Three Rivers race retired before reaching the finishing line, amid some of the most difficult racing of recent years. Around 100 boats set off from Horning Sailing Club, which organises the event, on Saturday morning in a series of staggered starts. Boats taking part range from small two-man dinghies to some of the largest river cruisers on the waterways. Crews have 24 hours to complete the race, which involves navigating parts of the Bure, Thurn and Ant over a course of around 50 miles. The event, which has been running since 1961, involves the boats having to pass below bridges at Acle and Potterhyam, where high water levels created particular difficulties for many of the larger vessels. One boat even appeared to become stuck when navigating through Potter Bridge, causing quite a stir for the large crowd of onlookers who gather there. But it was beyond Potter, on Higham Sound and Hickling Broad, that the vessels faced their toughest test, with strong winds whipping up choppy conditions. There were several capsizes during the course of the event, which has been called Europe's toughest inland sailing race. 60 boats finished the race, with the overall winner, Fox, a Yare and Bure class boat helmed by Chris Bunn, in a time of 6 hours, 54 minutes and 27 seconds. In second place was Ghost, another Yare and Bure, with James Dugdale at the helm, finishing just 2 minutes behind. Fiasco, a Wayfarer helmed by John Clemenson, came in third. The full results of the race and the winners from each category can be found on the Three Rivers Race website, www.3rr.uk. A parody music video filmed in Norwich and Great Yarmouth and sung in a strong Norfolk accent has gone viral on social media. East Anglian Boy, a new song released by Leon Mallett, has racked up more than 1 million views after being posted on Facebook on Sunday night. The singer, who appeared on The X Factor in 2017, says he wrote the song, set to the tune of American Boy by Estelle, in about an hour 3 months ago. The 29-year-old said, "I've been writing parody songs for quite a while, but haven't ever done anything with them. This one felt different from the rest. It seemed a bit more relatable. I showed it to my nan, and she was absolutely obsessed with it, and constantly telling me to do something with it. I thought of some good ideas for a video and filmed some shots in Norwich about 2 weeks ago, and then sort of left it for a bit. Mr. Mallett was spurred on to film the rest of the scenes in Great Yarmouth at the weekend after a video of him performing the song at a charity fundraising event racked up more than 1 million views in just 24 hours. He came to Great Yarmouth the next day to film the remaining scenes and posted the official video of the song that night. After seeing how many people have enjoyed the song, the singer plans to release more parody songs about Norfolk and hopes to do a comedy music tour around the county." Mr. Mallett added, "I have another half-written song to come. It's going to be in the same Norfolk accent and style. People are asking me to release the songs on Spotify and to make albums. They want more."
From Norwich City to Yarmouth Town, get down to the Norfolk Sound. Seafront donuts, £4 a pound, or daily as pies at the Norwich Ground. Chips on the market, they're not a bad price. I was 20p short, but he said, "You're right. Prince of Wales is calling, but I got work in the morning. Take me down to Riverside, let's catch the train. Yarmouth through and Norwich, no return one way. I really want to take you to Bannum Zoo. I'll be your East Anglian boy." She said, "All right, my darling.
Morning.
Let's get food and starving.
All right.
I don't mind a Wetherspoons. Her TGI's is nice.
It's quite pricey.
Likes the way I'm speaking. Finds the accent quite appealing. She didn't like my brand new trousers, fresh from Primark near St. Stephen's.
They're nice.
I don't bloody like designer clothes. The shoes I'm wearing were half price from Jonathan Trumbull's.
Right, bargain.
Oh no, what a palaver. In the bell and I spilt my lager.
Oh, bugger me.
I'll be your East Anglian boy.
East Anglian boy.
Take me down to Regent Road, let's catch the train. Norwich through to Yarmouth, gone the other way. I really want to ride the snails with you. I'll be your East Anglian boy.
East Anglian boy.
I'll be your East Anglian boy."
Well, it makes a change from Ronnie Ranald and the Yarmouth song. Anything makes a change from that. OK, time to get completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A new store has been granted permission to stay open until 1 a.m. despite locals' fears of sleepless nights and antisocial behaviour. The shop in St Peter's Road, Great Yarmouth, has been granted the late night licence ahead of its opening in the coming months. Run by Ramesh Khanna Paramchothi, it will be the second one-stop premises to open as a franchise in Norfolk. Neighbours were worried about the later opening hours due to ongoing problems with antisocial behaviour in the street, which led to objections being made. One person who lived above the shop said the hours of trading would devalue the flat and affect their safety, fearing people would buy alcohol to drink on the street. "These hours will attract antisocial behaviour, such as glass being smashed everywhere, people urinating on our property, and fighting both inside and outside the shop," they said. "We already have our fair share of antisocial behaviour, and we do not want it to increase." At a Great Yarmouth Borough Council licensing committee meeting this week, Mr. Paramchothi was keen to alleviate these concerns. He said, "Throughout my career, I have always tried to keep the community I live in safe, and I will do all I can to stop any antisocial behaviour happening around the shop. As a responsible person, I will make sure the shop will help the economy and local families rather than making problems worse." After debating the matter, members of the committee decided to approve the licence, arguing the 1 a.m. closing time of the shop was not exceptional compared to other premises in the area. One store is open 24 hours on the street. The licensing officer added that the problems on the street should not be held against the license holder, who has promised to do all he can to keep disruption to a minimum by not serving people alcohol if they are seen drinking outside the shop, and also limiting delivery times to between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. The body of a man has been recovered after entering the River Bure at North Quay. The emergency services were called out in the early hours of Wednesday morning. Police received reports of concerns for the safety of an individual on North Quay at 4:15 a.m. on that morning. Fire crews, ambulances and the Coast Guard also attended the incident, and the body, which had drifted, was recovered from the River Yare a short while later. A man in his 60s was pronounced dead at the scene. Later that morning, a red Nissan Micra was still in the nearby White Swan car park. A notice reading, "Authorities aware," was stuck to the car's rear window. Police said the man's death is not being treated as suspicious. The man's next of kin have been informed, and a file will be prepared for the coroner. Five people have been arrested during a police crackdown in Great Yarmouth. Three of the men were arrested for immigration offences and two for drug driving during the action day last Monday. 10 vehicles were seized as part of the operation, and 23 traffic offence reports were issued by the Roads and Armed Policing team. Operation Foxtail was launched to target drivers using counterfeit documents. A total of 53 vehicles were escorted to a designated check site by officers, involving colleagues from Operation Moonshot, the ANPR team, and the community support team. One of the drivers arrested for drug driving was also found to be using false number plates. PC Joshua Preston of the Roads and Armed Policing team said, "This was another successful day in Great Yarmouth. The day was very effective, not only disrupting crime on the road network, but also taking people without a driving licence or a roadworthy vehicle off the road. These individuals put other people at risk and should not be on the road in the first place. We will continue to run Operation Foxtail Action Days to disrupt organised crime and promote road safety." A baker has described her first day of business as crazy after selling out in just an hour and a half. Kelsey Armfield, 33, opened the cocoa and flour cake shed next to her home in South Walsham for the first time on Saturday, selling brownies, blondies, cupcakes and cookies. "Saturday was crazy," the mother of two said. "I really didn't expect it. People were knocking on the window, asking when there would be more brownies ready. The orders have been piling in." The 33-year-old believes the success is down to word spreading on local community groups on social media, and the fact that the small village and surrounding areas don't have many businesses offering similar products. Mrs. Armfield works in insurance part-time and has hopes of opening up a shop in the future. The cake shed will be open every Saturday
from 9 a.m. until the baked goods have sold out. Cupcakes cost £1.50 and blondies and brownies cost £2 each. Orders can also be made to be picked up during the week. The 80th anniversary of D-Day was remembered at a special event in Stalham, complete with a tribute to fishermen who helped support the operation. The town held a peace parade and lit a beacon on Wednesday evening to commemorate the D-Day landings. At 6 p.m. there was a fish supper at the Poppy Centre, honouring the fishermen who helped with the operation. Many fishermen were drafted into military service during the war, using their skills in small boats on operations around the coast. Meanwhile, fishing fleets played a crucial role in keeping the country fed. This was followed by the lighting of the beacon and tribute lanterns at 9 p.m. On Tuesday, June the 4th, Stalham Town Council and volunteers were busy putting the flags up in the High Street ahead of the commemorations. Doreen Joy, Stalham Town Council clerk, said beforehand, "Since we started organising our event, it has really exploded, and it is set to be a huge event. More and more people are wanting to come from around the county, and we will even have the Sheriff of Norfolk coming. We have lots planned, including a fish and chip supper, the lighting of the beacon at the village hall, and we will have serving officers from Colchester Barracks visiting us." A radio DJ and television presenter is to star at a 90s celebrity weekend in Great Yarmouth. Scott Mills, best known for his work on BBC Radio 1, will appear as part of a star-studded lineup at Vauxhall Holiday Park from November the 15th to November the 17th. The DJ, who now leads BBC Radio 2's daytime schedule, will be attending the throwback weekend on the Saturday night to relive a decade of timeless tunes. The Saturday festivities will be headlined by Boys Life, a group formed by former Westlife star Brian McFadden and Boyzone singer Keith Duffy. Pop group 911, best known for hit singles Body Shaking and All I Want Is You, are headlining the Sunday night. Entertainers on Friday include a DJ set from Kevin and Perry, Entrance with dance floor hits Set You Free, Do You Think I'm Sexy and Forever, and UK music group Baby D with their number one, Let Me Be Your Fantasy. The Celebrity Weekender event can be booked via the Park Dean Resort's website. A three-night stay at Vauxhall Holiday Park is available from £219, with a choice of holiday homes, caravans or apartments. A seafront cafe in Great Yarmouth could be bulldozed and rebuilt as a gourmet street food eatery as part of a wider project to revitalise the area. The Beach House Cafe is located off South Beach Parade behind the Winter Gardens, which has been closed since 2008 but is set to be restored with £12.3 million of funding from the National Lottery. Great Yarmouth Borough Council is now proposing, as part of that larger project, to also redevelop the neighbouring cafe. The matter will be discussed next Tuesday, June the 11th, at a cabinet meeting. In a report prepared ahead of the assembly, officers said the new cafe would be open all day and early evening and provide a small food and beverage option to complement the catering at the Winter Gardens. The cafe would provide contemporary, informal snack and light meals, a bakery and deli with fast-paced eat-in or takeaway service, the report states. Officers are proposing a gourmet street food type operation that would include coffee from a local roaster as well as spontaneous picnic hampers. We would hope to see local ingredients feature strongly and the operator working with artisan suppliers, they added. Officers also state the proposal would add value to the wider Winter Gardens experience and provide additional revenue and investment value for the council. The report requests cabinet ministers to approve proposals to redevelop the Beach House Cafe, subject to securing external funding programme. The restored Winter Gardens is expected to open by Easter 2027. Plans include community spaces, cafes and opportunities for leisure, entertainment and learning. The Winter Gardens is the last surviving Victorian glasshouse in the country and in 2021 was one of five transformational projects across the country to be awarded a Heritage Horizon Award from the National Lottery Heritage Fund. And finally, more news about the weather. With speculation of a triple heatwave hitting the UK this June, here is what forecasters say the weather will be like in Norfolk for the rest of the month. Despite the arrival of meteorological summer, the stereotypical sunny weather has been put on hold. A cold front moved in at the start of this week and brought with it spells of rain and cooler temperatures. As it moves on, Norfolk is to remain largely dry with occasional showers during the rest of the week, and colder temperatures are to remain as a plume of cooler air makes its way over the county. However, those summer temperatures could return the week after, with the second half of the month being much warmer. A senior meteorologist at the British Weather Services, Jim Dale, said the UK is heading in the right direction for a heatwave, with temperatures well into the 30s. The Met Office agreed that a period of high pressure is set to bring warmer weather, although challenged the idea that there are signs of a heatwave. The long-range forecast for June the 19th until the start of July says that all areas can expect to see some spells of drier, sunnier weather. The forecast added, temperatures are most likely to be close to normal or slightly above. So, even the weathermen don't really know.
Well, that reminds me of the old argument about whether BBC or ITV forecasted the best weather. Let's blame the Icelandic volcano or Elon Musk for launching that oversized rocket. Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Andy. So we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe and well, hope the weather's warm, and bye for now.